This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Tomorrow, Indiana Humanities launches the Inseparable Film Tour, which explores the real and perhaps perceived differences that exist between rural, suburban, and urban communities in the state. The tour will travel across the state, showcasing five unique Indiana stories that explore this theme. Today, we're bringing you a collection of conversations I had with a few of the filmmakers behind these short films. Joining us today to introduce us to his short film, Hometown Media, is filmmaker Ryan Gleason. Ryan, thanks for making the time.
Yeah, thank you.
Let's jump right in. Can you tell us the story behind your short film, Hometown Media?
Yeah, so the film, sort of a short portrait of a small town newspaper publisher. They actually have two individual publications, but operate out of one office and one larger publisher, and they each are weekly papers and they're released the same day. So I follow two specific reporters, one from each paper, as they are doing some local stories. And then we also spend some time in the office sort of watching the process of editing and even down to picking up the papers from the printing press and hand labeling all the addresses they're getting mailed to.
That sounds like some pretty everyday stuff, but as I understand it, there was something quite a bit more interesting that kind of piqued your interest. What interested you in telling this particular story?
Yeah, so I grew up in a larger town in the county that this is based, where we have our own paper. I was originally a journalism student before moving to filmmaking, and have always been interested in following along, just sort of the way things are these days. Papers are closing and budgets are getting cut, and I heard through the grapevine about this small paper that's about 20 miles away from my parents' house that's in my home county, and started digging in, subscribed for about a year before actually even approaching them, but they've been growing, and they very specifically only focus on the very local news, which is sort of counter to what I see of a lot of small publications doing more national things, maybe as a cost-saving measure. But the Hometown Media Group, which is where my film's title comes from, has really doubled down on investing in local reporters and just telling very hyper-local stories, and acting as sort of a beacon of communication for their community.
So then how did you find out about the opportunity to make the movie with the support of Indiana Humanities?
So it's I've been playing with this idea of doing a film. I'm just generally interested in how we gather news and media in Indiana. I personally feel like Hoosiers are very underrepresented in larger national media. So we kind of have our own thing going on. We've been playing for years about diving into a story, comparing a few different modes, which would be like a small rural paper, maybe a larger town paper, and radio. I was playing with this, and I found the Hometown Media Group, kind of fell in love with them in particular, but hadn't started anything, just kept doing lots of research. And this grant opportunity came up, and it just seemed like the perfect opportunity, you know, hone down the story a little bit, just follow one publication. But it gives me a really good opportunity to sort of dive into this idea and sort of flesh it out and see if it can become something even more.
And the project that is this Inseparable Film Tour orbits around this central theme of rural and urban divides. What made this story a good fit to explore that theme?
I think it's about Hoosiers communicating with other Hoosiers and how we tell our stories and how we see each other. What's interesting about this is, like, it's two, as I would define them, very small towns, but within their particular communities, like, they're reasonably sized towns. It's in a lot of farming communities outside of them. So this is an urban and rural, just on a scale that's a little bit smaller than what I'm used to from Richmond. They largely are connecting maybe three to four distinct small towns and then all the farming communities around them. as we know about Indiana, it is many, many, many small splats of small farming communities.
And can you talk a little bit about the style you chose to film this movie through? From what I understand from your description, it sounds like this is less of a sit down and be interviewed kind of movie and more of an immersive approach. What does it look like?
I think you just hit it nail on the head. I decided pretty early on, I work in documentary and lots of different modes of styles of filmmaking, depending on the story. It felt for this, you know, a short film, we didn't really have the time to sit down and do an interview. Short film gives you a really great opportunity to just experience a moment and a moment in time with people in their space. I opted out of doing any interview. We had some on the fly things that, you know, just through conversation with people while the camera's running, they're telling me things and those kind of feel like interviews, but it was never a sit down and ask questions, more of we're just going to hang out and I have a camera and whatever happens, happens.
Why'd you want to do it that way?
I think for me, growing up in Indiana, it's going back to the like underrepresentation of Hoosiers in media. I think it always struck me when I felt like I saw someone I knew on film and being themselves, and really one of the reasons why I got into the whole thing. So really wanted to just do them justice as people in just their environment, being themselves. And I really feel like a lot of Hoosiers will also be able to see people they know within these characters, just being themselves in their space. And it's also part of the process is you just sit with people and hang out with them. It's very disarming, and we can all be really honest with each other that I feel like it sometimes can be unnatural in an interview setting.
So from what I know about the film, it follows two particular journalists. Is that right?
That's correct.
And who are they and what do they say, and why did you talk to them in particular?
So Millie, who's the first reporter that we come to, she's from Richmond as well. She was actually my first real connection to the whole thing. We have some mutual acquaintances, and she went through the same high school journalism program as I did at Richmond High School. We had an amazing teacher, Ann Herman. So I'd been following along, and Millie had worked at the larger paper in town and had been laid off when they had a big layoff happening. And she picked up this job, and I had just noted a name I knew, Moved Papers. I'd been a fan of her writing. So through her high school journalism teacher, we were able to connect. And what's cool about Millie is we have a very similar perspective. We're not necessarily from the community that this work is happening in, but we both love it a lot. So felt like her gaze is very similar to my own. So with her, we go to what is a fascinating giant vintage ball jar sale. She knows nothing about ball jars. And we just kind of watch her go through this process of interviewing people and learning about this thing that neither of us knew was a thing to even buy and collect until we were actually there.
So what did you learn about what it's like to be a journalist in a small community? Is there a different kind of relationship happening there than a reporter might experience in a bigger city?
Yeah, absolutely. And so Dan, our other reporter, is from Hagerstown, and he mainly covers Hagerstown sports. And I sort of feel this, I'm a huge sports journalism fan in general. And reading Dan's stuff, I always got this feeling of like Indiana's Grantland rice. Like it's beautiful, flowery language that really paints a beautiful picture of the whole thing. So Dan and I got pretty close through this process. And at some point, and luckily the camera was on, he tells me the story about running into a reporter from, he thought it was a paper in Gary, a bigger publication. He asked Dan, what's the worst part about working at a small town paper? And Dan tells him, he's to sum up what Dan's saying, you get too attached to your characters. You fall in love with the people you're covering. You know all the kids on the sports teams, and you get to know their parents, and you feel every loss and every win. And then the reporter tells him, like, no, you're wrong. That's the best part. And then Dan has this sort of realization while we're talking that it really is the best part of the whole thing. He gets to have this very intimate relationship with the people he's covering. And I think that's where his very beautiful prose comes out of, is a real love for the people that he's reporting on.
Movies that portray the lives of everyday Hoosiers aren't exactly terribly common, and that's even more true for those of us that live in more rural areas. Is there something to be said for seeing your life or a life similar to yours portrayed on film?
I think it's the most important part of it. At least it is for me. Film's an amazing tool for building empathy and understanding. It's in a lot of ways a teleportation device. And, you know, wouldn't say rural Indiana has a booming tourism economy, so we're going to bring it to them. I'm really excited to share this with all my peers in Chicago who live 20 miles from the Indiana border, but really just don't understand how I grew up. And the people I know and the people I care about. I think it's an amazing tool for communication and building understanding. So, I think it's amazing that Indiana Humanities is doing this, because finding funding to be able to do projects like this is only beneficial to all of us.
In the last minute or so that we have, what do you hope the audience maybe explores, learns, or takes away from watching Hometown Media, your film?
I think for me, especially when we're doing this inseparable tour, is that people see people they know and they're proud of it. They're proud of their towns. They're proud of themselves. And that there's hope. Like, newspapers and our stories that come from those newspapers are important. And there's a way to make it work that's beneficial to everyone.
We've been talking today with Ryan Gleason, the filmmaker behind the short film Hometown Media. Ryan, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
If you'd like to check out Hometown Media or any of the films that are included on the Inseparable Film Tour that launches this month across Indiana, you can find more about dates and locations closest to you at indianahumanities.org. That's indianahumanities.org. When we come back, we'll talk to the filmmakers behind a piece that follows a Bloomington couple and their endeavors to start a composting company that challenges the way we think about what we throw away far beyond just material items. I'm Matt Pelser. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. We're turning our attention now to another short film in the Inseparable Film Tour, The Earth Keepers. We're joined now by the Bloomington-based duo that directed and produced the film, Gabriel Lance and Mitchell Teplitsky. They're here with us today to tell us a little about the making of and the story behind the film. Gabriel and Mitchell, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Matt, for having us.
Thank you. This is Mitch.
Gabriel, we're going to start with you. Can you introduce us to the story that The Earth Keepers follows?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. The basic nutshell of the story is we follow the main characters of Ryan and Andrea, who Mitch and I have been calling Rondrea. Anyway,
it's kind of like
Riandra.
Kind of like Brangelina.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, Ryan Conway, his wife Andrea, they started a composting business here in Bloomington. And the unique part about it, though, is that they partner with a very unlikely group of ex-cons who, you know, ex-incarcerated individuals who are trying to rehabilitate back into society. So they're on a mission to help save the planet, but they befriend and employ ex-cons to do it.
Mitch, can you tell us about the genesis of how this particular story and the Indiana Humanities Grant came together to bring this movie to life?
Yes. I had been on the Indiana Humanities mailing list for a few months, and I got an email in which they announced the grant, and the theme of it immediately grabbed my attention. This inseparable theme, looking for stories about how people in the state were grappling with the divides between urban and rural communities. I'm from New York City, from a very urban place myself, been here about 3 years. And so I'm always thinking about and talking about, you know, what it's like to have my feet in both worlds. I immediately got out a little notebook, jotted down about 8 or 9 ideas, mostly of people that I had actually met here who were doing things that I thought were pretty cool and potentially interesting. This particular one, I knew Ryan, the main character of the composting duo. I had known him for about a year, and I knew him because he was an occasional attendee of a men's group that I go to, a weekly men's group called the Mankind Project here in Bloomington. I thought what he was doing was cool, especially because he and his wife are also very intellectual and accomplished academics, both PhD people. So the idea that, you know, they had this path and they left it all behind to move to a farm and then decide they were going to dedicate their lives to composting was like, wow, that's kind of interesting. And then when I talked to him more to get an update about his work, and he told me what Gabriel mentioned about the fact that they were starting to that they had met this nonprofit that was helping find jobs for former ex-offenders, I thought that was really interesting. So the short answer is, being on the Indiana Humanities mailing list, being personally interested in the theme, and having a friendship with Ryan, and then discovering more about their work and thinking this could be this could be a story that I could do a good job with, and that could maybe, get the grant because it sounded interesting.
And Inseparable, of course, is focused on exploring the divides that exist between rural and urban areas. Gabe, what interested you personally in exploring that topic?
Mitch. Mitch came to me kind of with this idea and this proposal and kind of laid it out loud for me. He said, hey, do you want to have some fun? You know, you want to do an adventure? And when he kind of laid it out like he just told you, I mean, it just sounded interesting. And I think that humanities was a big player for us, that just, you know, the grant to be able to kind of give us some momentum to do that. I think for me personally, it's interesting because it's a human interest story, and it's really focused, I think, on a big one that everybody's talking about right now, which is climate change and what's the, you know, the impact and what are people doing in relationship to climate change. And so that kind of initially hooked me in, and I said, wow, that sounds interesting. And I also was familiar. I knew Ryan and Andrea beforehand, not very well, but I think, again, that second piece about the partnership, you know, an unlikely partnership with ex-offenders, I just thought was very interesting, you know, to try to see, you know, even Ryan says this kind of to us when we interviewed him, that it's like we need to start thinking we don't throw anything away in society. We don't throw people away. We don't throw food scraps away. Like, everything's a resource. And it's like I really like that notion. I feel like that's a powerful sentiment for all of us, that it's like, you know, that there's use in everything. And we just need to kind of, you know, wrap our brains around that a little better and bring our hearts to it, to understand that we can do something about all of these different issues. And that's I think one of the main themes that we really explore in the film is that it's kind of a family process. It's a coming together that, you know, we're not separate, you know, in the nature of the theme, I think, of Inseparable, is that we're all interconnected.
I'd like to add, if I may, another compelling reason for me to do this story is that because when I go back to New York City, which I do a few times a year, I'm always struck and amazed by how unaware my friends and family are about Indiana and the Midwest, even those who are very highly educated and well-traveled. When I saw this, but living here, I have met all these very accomplished people doing very innovative things, very positive things, and it motivates me to want to tell a story about a project and people here who are doing hopeful, cool things. Because when I go back to New York, you know, they just say, hey, how's life in the cornfields? And I'm like, just rolling my eyes. And... so being that this is an Indiana broadcast, right, I thought it would be an interesting anecdote to share.
That's all we do is corn, soy, and wheat, right?
But I really do. But it circles back. It connects back to this theme about the urban-rural divide, because I actually understand much more how big a country this is and how, you know, we are divided. People really don't know a lot about each other.
Now that you've made the film, did you take away any insights into the rural-urban divide that we're kind of exploring with this program?
Honestly, for me, I feel like what we explored is the range of humanity. And what I mean by that is, like, I think we really just kind of got to go on an adventure. And that adventure, though, is about connecting with people. And exactly like what Mitch is talking about. I mean, you know, I was born in Florida. I mean, I spent a lot of time in Florida, but I also spent a lot of time in Indiana. And it's like, it doesn't really matter where you go. It's a big, giant country, but it's like, it's a lot of the same things that you see. You see the same human struggles. You see the same, you know, things that we're all challenged with. And even though we have those stereotypes, like Indiana is just a big giant cornfield, it's like there's a lot deeper things that are going on. And I think for me, what I really noticed the most is that we all have human struggles that we have to deal with. And it's like we have to be real about those. And it's actually helpful, I think, for me when I see that somebody else, it helps me kind of put it into perspective that, you know, my own challenges and my own struggles, that we're all going through those very similar things. And that's, you know, on that kind of core level, that's why I think we really need each other. We really need each other to be able to work together to problem solve and figure out the solutions of tomorrow. And you know, what are we doing to progress in learning more and understanding more about the world around us? So that we have a better world.
And Gabe, another topic that you're exploring in your film, and we mentioned it a little bit earlier, is grappling with climate change. And this is a big topic.
That's right.
But this
That's
film, right. Your film gets to explore it in a really grassroots kind of way. What was that like?
Yeah, I mean, I think to me, it really just gives me a lot of ideas. I mean, the more Mitch and I would kind of spitball it, talk things back and forth, and we would go out and we would film. I mean, I just think that this is one of many, many things that is going on right now as far as what are people doing about climate change, you know, like on a grassroots level, not just the big giants and the big companies and the big players, but like, what are people doing? What are them? And kind of like for our characters, the Ma and Pa, like Ryan and Andrea, I mean, they're doing something on a very small scale, basic level. And I think that's what's interesting, because it's David and Goliath. It's like, I think we really relate to the underdog a lot, you know, especially in Indiana, Hoosier State here, as far as basketball. It's like, I grew up with that sentiment that even the underdogs create big ripples. And that's what I like to see. I want to see what's happening on a very small grassroots level, because I think more of us can relate to that kind of a level of like not feeling powerless and disempowered in our life. We want to see, yeah, what can I do? You know, how can I get back in the game? How, you know, what are the steps that I can take to actually make a difference?
And Mitchell, I love this theme that you're exploring about zero waste. Don't waste food. Don't waste people. And the Earth Keepers also highlights this partnership between Fable Farms and Made Up Mind, Inc., which allows for the farm to hire ex-offenders. And this opens an interesting conversation about the justice system as well. This is another big topic. Was it a challenge to incorporate these big conversations into just one short film?
Well, yes and no. I mean, yeah, it's such a huge topic, and it's way beyond the scope of our little film to do justice to it, pardon the pun. But I would say the biggest challenge was, in the short amount of time that we had, you know, because we were filming this over a period of a few months, was just, spending enough quality time with the guys who were working with Made Up Mind, because they were always working. Like, they are always working. Mm-hmm. And frankly, some of them, unfortunately, had to go back to jail That's right. Not for reasons that I think they might have violated their parole unknowingly, things like that. So actually, I learned, I think Gabriel and I both are learning a little bit more about the incredible challenges that they have to just assimilate back into society. So, you know, to answer your question, it was just really spending enough time with those guys and having a limited amount of time both to film and a limited amount of time to, you know, tell their story, because this is just going to be a 10 or 12 minute piece. So
that's right.
But it's even in a short amount of time, you get a glimpse, you know, you learn some basic things. I learned some basic things about, you know, that I had not really thought about because I had never worked with this population. Things like, you know, they're supposed to, let's say, get their blood or their urine checked on a weekly basis, and they don't have cars. How do they get around? In New York City, that's not particularly a problem. Here, it's essential. I mean, things like that I started thinking about, like, how do they actually get by day to day? Or even more importantly, I think, is just the almost impossible task of getting hired.
That's right.
If you have a record,
right.
It's really hard to
Find a job,
get hired.
Yeah.
So these sound like obvious things, but I had never really talked to people who have gone through that, and it does make you think and be more empathetic to that.
Gabe, what do you hope that the audience maybe thinks about or takes away after seeing your film?
You know, I think on a core basic level, we're hoping to be it like a catalyst. You know, it's just to encourage people to talk, to think about it, to kind of empathize, put yourself in, you know, these people's shoes and give just an idea and a perspective of what they might be going through. But I think also, you know, on a broader level about what is going on, like what are, you know, people doing about climate change and little things, as far as like, what can you do, you know, as a person, as an individual, as a household, as a family or something, to be able to contribute for something mega and huge such as climate change. I hope that's the takeaway that people watch and they continue to kind of realize, you know, because even for me, like through this process, it really encourages me to want to do more, even want to make more media, make more films centered around these kind of topics. Because the more we were, you know, for us keep researching, I just feel like I kept learning things. I was like, well, I didn't know that. Well, I didn't know that as far as these stats and statistics about some of the impact that's going on. And I just know from the research that I've been doing that there's a lot more that's going on of people that are trying to make a change and a difference, and the activities and the growth of knowledge and the research that's happening around this. I mean, I just think it's exploding right now. You know, it's a huge buzz, and I'm glad it is.
And you're about to head out for the Inseparable film tour, which will include screenings in locations all across the state. But Mitch, I know you would like for people outside of Indiana to see this film as well. So what happens next? Where do these kinds of films go after these initial screenings?
Yeah. Well, first of all, Humanities is going to host the films on their website for streaming. So that's great, because obviously anybody anywhere they are on the planet can watch them. I am going to promote not just my film, but the whole series to the mailing list that I have. I've been doing a lot of marketing on my own projects for years, and that includes people everywhere. We've been invited to show the film already at a couple of environmental film festivals and conferences, and they are happening all over the planet. So there's opportunities to show it there. And I'm going back to New York City for a week at the end of January, and I'm planning to meet with a couple of people I know who have been funders or supporters of my previous work and see if they might be interested in helping to support doing maybe a longer project, maybe an additional episode under this umbrella theme of either climate change or the Inseparable theme. I don't know. I'm not sure where it's going, but like Gabriel said, we've kind of stumbled onto this little story that happens to be the story of our times, it seems, mm-hmm. both,
That's
right. you know, climate change on the one hand, and then the, you know, the division within America, at least here in the United States, the growing divide, seeming mm-hmm. divide within this country. Although I think stories like this can give you some hope that those divides can be, you know, transcended or
right. more unified,
because at the end of the day, you know, like Gabriel said before, everybody's trying to do their best and find meaningful work and working hard, and people have the same concerns everywhere, even though they might, you know, vote differently or have different occupations, that sort of thing. That's my take on it.
Mitchell Teplitsky and Gabriel Lance, the filmmakers behind The Earth Keepers, which you can see on the upcoming Inseparable film tour. Gabe and Mitch, thanks so much for making the time.
Yes, our pleasure. Thank you, Matt.
Yeah, thanks a lot. This has been fun.
When we come back, we'll be exploring one more of the films within the tour, From Sundown to Sunrise, which traces one family's journey integrating into an all-white Indiana town in 1968. We'll be back with that conversation after the break. This is All In, back in 90 seconds. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. We're back now talking about the Inseparable film tour that's launching tomorrow, January 15th, in Valparaiso, Indiana. The film tour will be coming to several towns across Indiana now through March, and if you're interested in viewing this collection of short films, you can go to IndianaHumanities.org for a full list of dates and locations. Speaking of the launch of the tour in Valparaiso, the story at the heart of the next film we're talking about is set exactly there. We're joined now by one of the filmmakers behind From Sundown to Sunrise, Tom Desch. Tom, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let's start with the story central to this film. Can you introduce us to the story behind From Sundown to Sunrise?
Certainly. So Valparaiso, and this kind of ties into the title, was either officially or unofficially, there's the jury's still out on this, but it was known as a sundown town. And these were communities, you know, it wasn't just unique to Valparaiso or Indiana. There were communities throughout the United States where there was either a written or unwritten rule where anyone of color had to be out of town by sundown. The main narrative of the film is how that changed and how it's changing in a very positive way in Valparaiso, Indiana. And the story is told through the eyes of a gentleman by the name of Robert Cotton, who is now a Valparaiso city councilman. And his family was the first family to integrate Valparaiso, Indiana in the late 1960s. And this all came about really through a friendship between Robert's mother and a gentleman at Valparaiso University who had been working in Chicago. And, you know, in 1968, a very turbulent time, she pretty much challenged this gentleman, whose name was Walt Reiner. He was doing, you know, kind of a group called the Prince of Peace Volunteers, which was kind of in essence a Peace Corps type group that was run under the Lutheran Church. Robert's mother, Barbara Cotton, was working with this group. I believe she, you know, was part of like an administrator with the group, and her and Walt, you know, had a very good relationship. And, you know, about the time of Martin Luther King's assassination, the assassination of Robert Kennedy, this group decides to kind of pull out of Chicago. And she pretty much challenged Mr. Reiner, say like, well, you're going back to, you know, this community, Valpo. I've heard so much about it, I think I'd like to move my family there. And that's kind of how it all began.
And this was a story that your co-producer and director, Patricia Wisniewski, wanted to explore. Do you know what it was about this story in particular that piqued her interest?
Well, I guess, to be fair, Pat had always wanted to do a story kind of about race relations in the United States, and she'd been playing around with different angles, to be honest, but she wasn't quite sure the direction she was going to take. And it, you know, and as she's told me, and this is a little bit of hearsay, but, you know, she can remember growing up on the South Side of Chicago, and she just has this very, you know, visceral memory of, you know, the viaduct, the railroad tracks, being this division between the white side of town and the black side of town. And really, ever since that, it's kind of been something that's stuck with her. And when she started to make films, she really wanted to get back to that subject. So she, when she, and she now is a Valparaiso resident, and, you know, she saw some positive things happening in Valparaiso and started to, you know, talk to different people. And ultimately she met Councilman Cotton, and, you know, at first she wasn't sure if, you know, his story and his family story was the one she would tell, but it turned to be, you know, such a compelling story, such a strong story, that really this almost became, you know, Councilman Cotton kind of became, you know, really kind of a third producer almost, you know, it, you know, that became, he became kind of so central to this project. So, you know, in a lot of ways, the filmmaking team is Pat, myself, and Robert.
Does the movie go on to explore the evolution of Robert Cotton becoming the first African-American elected to the Valpo City Council in 2015?
It certainly does. It certainly does. You know, it is a, it's a historical film, but we bring it up to today. And, you know, and we kind of talk about, you know, what are the challenges that still confront us? You know, we've made a lot of headway, but we, you know, we still have a long way to go. You know, the United States is still a very segregated country in a lot of places. So, you know, kind of through Robert's eyes and through his experiences, you know, we hope there's some lessons as to what can be done to help alleviate that.
And all of the Inseparable films have this common thread, in that they examine the way that we experience rural and urban identities today. What do you think we have to learn from this film about those different identities and the way they interact?
You know, I think central to it, at least, you know, from my point of view, is that we sometimes have to kind of break down these ideas of that, you know, you're this culture, I'm this culture, this rural culture versus urban culture, you know, black culture versus white culture, and try to bridge those divides, and that we're all, you know, it's an American culture. You know, we're all, you know, in essence, we're inseparable. We're all in this together.
If you could prep anyone for what you want them to take away from it, and obviously, you know, when you're experiencing art and you're taking in art as it's sort of melded with this sort of historical information, what, I guess, would you say to sort of set this up for people who are planning to watch the movie?
You know, I think it's a story of people taking risks. And I think, you know, maybe the kind of the lesson of the film, if I am pressed into giving one, is that change occurs when people kind of step out of, you know, maybe their comfort zone. You know, Barbara Cotton and her family very much stepped out of their comfort zone in moving to Valparaiso. And also, you know, and the folks that were connected to her in Valparaiso, they were stepping out of their comfort zone too. You know, there was a lot of pushback to this, you know, at the time. You know, there were, you know, threatening phone calls and, you know, no one, you know, it was very difficult to, you know, obtain a house. So people actually came together to, you know, help build the Cotton's first house in Valparaiso. You know, it's really a story of good people doing good things to help one another out. And kind of the story shows that, you know, the integration of Valparaiso wasn't you know, the gift wasn't necessarily to the Cotton family. The gift was to the community, and that it was no longer the segregated community. And that is really kind of the huge takeaway from this, in that, you know, for America to thrive, we need to, you know, be together and be inseparable.
Tom Desch is one of the filmmakers behind From Sundown to Sunrise. Thanks for joining us today, Tom. We really appreciate it.
Appreciate you having me.
And now we turn to the last film we'll be previewing within the Inseparable series, Larry from Gary. Joining us now is the director and producer of the short film, Dan Rybicki. Dan, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Dan, I'm going to take a leap here and wager that this Larry from Gary is a central character in your film. Can you introduce us to Larry's story?
Absolutely. Larry is the central character in my story. And the central character, Larry Brewer, is a charismatic teacher and choreographer from Gary, Indiana, who has dedicated the last 35 years of his life to students in Gary, to promoting dance and teaching dance in the community.
And you started filming this project in 2017 at the high school that Larry taught at, but just a few months later, those plans kind of changed. What happened at the high school?
Well, about 3 or 4 months after I started filming, the state of Indiana took over the Gary School Corporation. And by the end of that school year, the school I was filming Larry at shut down.
What school was that?
That was Wirt Emerson, which is one of the public schools in Gary.
So does Larry even still teach today?
This is what, you know, the film became... I didn't really want to make a depressing film about a school, you know, shutting down that had this incredible arts program. So I sort of refocused the film on what I thought was really positive, which was there is this teacher who continued to, you know, dedicate himself to promoting the work that his students were doing and continuing to teach students even outside of the high school. So I focused my efforts on documenting Larry and stayed with him. And so even though he wasn't teaching at the high school, I discovered that he had a studio called the South Shore Dance Alliance, and that even some of the students that Larry had been teaching since fifth or sixth grade had gone on to study at Juilliard and had come back from Juilliard and were now teachers at the studio. So I kind of discovered, you know, even though there was the sad story of a school closing, Larry himself had sort of developed relationships with students that were still ongoing decades later and had still managed to, you know, kind of make the arts thrive within this community.
So some of his students have then gone on to dance professionally. Do we know where some of them ended up?
Absolutely. And this is something that I wanted to feature in the film, which is, you know, I live my life for pleasant surprises. And like I said, I don't think people, you know, necessarily associate Gary, Indiana with, you know, this extraordinary arts program in high school that produced dancers that would go on to the Juilliard School. And, you know, one of the other dancers that I ended up having the privilege to film in New York City actually is a principal dancer at the Alvin Ailey Dance Theater, which is, you know, one of the best dance companies in America. So, and he actually appears in the film several times. And it's just one example of the caliber of students that Larry inspired over the decades.
How did you find out about this story?
You know, I have been living in Gary, Indiana since 2008. And I originally was lucky enough to catch, you know, a dance performance. I think it was like, I don't know, maybe in 2013. And I realized, you know, it was in a local gallery and it was being done by students from a high school. And I was just blown away by the quality of it. And so, you know, I was lucky enough to, like I said, see it. And then I found who did this and who was responsible for this. And people told me, oh, this guy, Larry Brewer. And I found out that this high school, which was a nationally recognized arts high school, was right around the corner from where I lived. So I just walked over and started to really, you know, see what was going on there. And it felt like the Fame School, you know, here in Gary. And it was just like, it just blew my mind. So I couldn't help but be drawn towards wanting to tell the story of what was going on here.
Are there other examples of programs at this particular school where teachers like Larry were making the same kind of impacts?
Yes, absolutely. And it was, in a way, difficult to kind of tether the story. I mean, this is always the case when you're making documentaries. There's so many great stories, so many amazing people that you meet. But yes, I mean, initially, had the school not closed, this was going to be a longitudinal documentary. I started filming auditions in several areas, and I was going to try to, you know, meet kids in fifth or sixth grade and film them over the course of 6 or 7 years at the school to see how their, you know, involvement in the arts was, you know, changing them. And so, yeah, initially I was filming amazing acting teachers working with students, incredible music teachers. The chorus at this school performed at the White House for the Obamas. I mean, it just was truly incredible. So yeah, finding the angle or the story was difficult, but like I said, there's something about dance, and there was just something about Larry that, you know, I was really drawn towards.
The central theme of the Inseparable film tour is to explore urban and rural divides. What made this story a good fit for the project, in your view?
Well, you know, I think that Larry from Gary does celebrate dance as a universal means of expression. And I do hope that my film's underlying message about the importance of arts education resonates. And I think that's not just in urban areas like Gary, but in rural and suburban parts of Indiana as well, where high school arts programs that teach students how to draw, sing, and play instruments or dance are in danger of being cut.
For all the challenges and obstacles that are present in this film, you insist that this is not just another sad story. What do you mean by that? And what do you hope people take away instead? Is this a sad story?
I mean, honestly, this is not a sad story. I really did not want to make another film about, you know, like I said, the dissolution of a school or a community suffering because of budget cuts. And that's why I kind of reshaped the story to actually focus on a person who, despite all these challenges, continues to dedicate himself to inspiring students, both former students who completely come back and work with him and current students. And so, you know, I guess what I hope my documentary will show are the ways in which art drives the human spirit while humanizing the challenges that do face arts education in underprivileged cities like Gary by focusing, like I said, on one person who continues to cultivate and practice dance even after he was forced to stop teaching it because of a financial crisis.
Dan Rybicki, the producer and director of the short documentary Larry from Gary. Dan, thanks so much for taking the time with us today. Congrats on the film and enjoy the tour.
Matt, thank you so much. Have a great day.
Larry from Gary is one of 5 short films within the Inseparable Film Tour that features Indiana stories told by Hoosier filmmakers. The tour launches tomorrow in Valparaiso, Indiana, and then travels to several other Indiana locations through March. If you're interested in more details, you can find those at IndianaHumanities.org. Again, that is IndianaHumanities.org. Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Maggie Galon. Scott Cameron's our managing editor. Our show is engineered by Adam Gross. If you'd like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can get it wherever you get podcasts. Tomorrow, we'll share the story of the Indiana man who was once called America's James Bond. A new book shares the story of how Danville native Bill Harvey took down Soviet master spy Kim Philby in the early days of the Cold War. In the meantime, find us on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. I'm Matt Pelser. Thanks for listening. This is All In.